How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Instead, it's a set play. It's a high pick and roll with Favors and Hill. Hill drives for the left side of the floor. Lobs it back to Favors. Little push shot. Short. Gobert tip. Yes! With 27.5 seconds left, the Wasatch Front combines the two for the Jazz.
You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for Thursday, 25th of May. The Rudy Gobert season review. Nice, classy comments from Derek Favors' agent. How refreshing. And your Facebook Live questions all coming on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Thanks so much for tuning in. You can subscribe to this podcast every day. It comes your direction via Android or iTunes or however it is you might want to grab it. So please feel free to do so. Looking forward to getting your questions. I know a lot of Jazz fans have a lot of questions right now, and I'll do my best to answer them for you and get your thoughts, get thoughts to you on all of those. So submit your questions today on Facebook Live. Thanks for tuning in. Thursday edition Facebook Live brought to you by our friends over at Shamrock Auto Group. We sincerely appreciate Rob Taylor and the group there for their support of the program. And if you're in the market this weekend for a going to do Memorial Day car shopping and you're interested in considering purchasing a car or a truck in the next, weekend, then call Shamrock. 801-319-2250. That's 801-319-2250. Most of the cars at Shamrock who are out in Pleasant Grove are 6 to 12 months old, 5 to 20,000 miles. So you're talking Suburbans, Yukons, big SUVs, Utah County Assault Vehicles. And they've got reliable sedans as well. Go and look at the Google reviews on Shamrock Auto Group, and you will understand what they're all about. Out-the-door pricing in 5 minutes. Test drive by yourself. Buying experience in under an hour. Full service, can do financing, in-house and extended warranties. Value-driven. Carfax on every car. And the cool thing is when Rob built Shamrock Auto Group, his first hire was his GM, who was a mechanic. So when they're out buying cars and getting cars, they're able to make sure that they've got high-quality things for you. People come from out of state to be a part of Shamrock, so you can do the same if you're out of state, or at least just take the trek down to Pleasant Grove, Utah, and check out Shamrock Auto Group, or give Rob a call. It's his personal number, 801-319-2250, 801-319-2250. I love what Rob always says. It's not a big deal if they don't buy a car from us. It is a big deal that we take care of the needs of our customers, and everyone at Shamrock worked very hard to make sure every customer gets a great car or truck that fits their needs and their budget. So, check it out. All right. I thought the article by Tony Jones the other day in the Salt Lake Tribune was really refreshing. In particularly the comments that came from Wallace Prather, the agent of Derek Favors, that like, hey, we get it. We can do the math. If you suddenly are paying the max to Gordon and you're paying the max to Rudy, we're going to have a hard time getting what we want. And I think that's a really, really encouraging sign that you just have. And this is why the Jazz have had such a great relationship with Favors and his agent the whole time, is there's just a total reasonableness to everything that's taking place from Derek and his agent in this time period. I think Derek's an incredibly valuable piece to the Jazz next year. And as I tried to explain in the season in review of Derek, I think one thing that's interesting is his dollar figure is so low that you're not going to get trade value to that same number. You're not going to get that type of production at the same number. So I think that you end up with the likelihood in Derek's most valuable asset to you is for him to work together, him in his free agent year, to show his value to the league and be performing for the Jazz. And then if he goes elsewhere, because the Jazz have re-signed Gordon, they've re-signed Rudy, they got to deal with Rodney and Dante, and there's not enough money left, then great. High fives all around. Everybody did what they needed to do for each other. The other angle here, by the way, is that the Jazz that favors plays at a high level, Rudy's there. The Jazz become a title contender, knocking on the Warriors' deal. And I don't think you can probably go max everybody. But the Jazz, I think, are willing to go do what they need to do. And if for some reason the Jazz are awfully close to breaking through with that group, I wouldn't be surprised if the Jazz didn't spend a heck of a lot more money than anyone ever realized. So those are my quick thoughts on Derek and that. But I just thought it was a really positive comment to see coming in from his agent, just an understanding and everything. And I think, you know, for Derek right now, it's hard to put a market value on who he is or where you want to trade him to or what he is. I mean, I was listening, you know, even there's conversations about LaMarcus Aldridge and what his value is in this type of game. And he's a much better mid-range shooter, but he doesn't stretch it. And he doesn't, you know, he's got his weaknesses, but he's a pretty good player. So the game's doing funky things to that position. Derek needs to have a good, healthy season where he shows his value so he can go get paid. So there's a lot of win-wins for both sides with keeping Derek with the Jazz. Too bad on the draft news story today on Frank Jackson, the Lone Peak star, he'll undergo foot surgery. He's expected out till July. So that's going to really hurt his draft situations. He had moved himself into the first round. I think he was planning to work out with the Jazz sometime soon. So that's a disappointing news in that regard. There's a new SI.com draft that has the Jazz taking DJ Wilson at 24 and Edmund Sumner at Xavier. Wilson's an interesting stretch player. I liked him the one Michigan game I watched this year. I like watching Michigan. I think their head coach is the best college coach in the country with offense, so I like to watch him. I'll start digging into some players here in the near future. I misspoke the other day. The 22nd is draft day. I will be out of town. And I'll be out of town right for the remainder afterwards. So I'm out the 19th to the 29th. We'll be back for Summer League. Edmund Sumner's an interesting player. He's out of Xavier. He tore his ACL. He was a mid-range prospect, mid-first-round prospect, tore his ACL along the way. And so it'll be interesting to see how he plays out in the draft. Chad Ford just launched just seconds ago his latest mock draft. Just for interest, it goes Markelle Fultz, followed by Lorenzo Ball, then Malik Monk at 3, Josh Jackson, Kansas at 4. He had slid a little bit in the SI draft. DeAndre Fox at 5, Tatum at 6, Jonathan Isaac 7, Dennis Smith 8. Don't worry, I'm not going through the whole thing. Nick Delinka at 9, and Zach Collins at 10. Lauri Markkanen at 11. That seems to be kind of that top 11 seems to be getting fairly well set. Some players I've seen around the Jazz names, Harry Giles at 14. Donovan Mitchell's all over the board. He was at 16. TJ Leaf, who I've seen at 24, is at 18 on Chad's latest mock. The Jazz at 24, Tony Bradley, a center out of North Carolina, good rebounder. You know, didn't play a huge role at North Carolina, so you're kind of making a jump on him. He did not do well at the combine. Not great athletically, but frankly, if you're paying Rudy Gobert $30 million, you need to go find a backup center who's cheap, and you're going to get that through the draft. And then at 30, they have the Jazz taking a Latvian center, who's, you know, probably a draft and stash. So those are the two players being talked about. Ivan Rabb at 27 out of Cal's an interesting player. That's about Frank Jackson at 25 picks after the Jazz at 24. All right. We'll get to your comments and questions. It's season review on Rudy Gobert today. It kind of feels silly, doesn't it? Like, what do you say? I mean, he was brilliant, right? He had mammoth days. He was dominating. He had 1,000 points, 1,000 rebounds, 200 blocks. I mean, it's just post All-Star break, 17 points, 13 rebounds, shot 70%, 60% free throw percentage, 66% free throw, 66% field goal percentage. I mean, just some huge nights, 35-15 against the Knicks, 27-25 against Dallas, 16-24 against Sacramento. I think that's the night of the tip-in. Was great late. Number two pick and roll man field goal percentage in the NBA behind DeAndre Jordan. You know, got his action off Hill and Hayward and Hill last year as his two main assist guys, and Dia was third. It's interesting. All three of those are players, you know, could or could not be back next year. Defends the most shots inside 5 feet, 10 a game. Most impressively was his offensive evolution from a 64% shooter at the rim to a 73% shooter at the rim. So really just an incredible season, an elite defender at the rim. We're so much better with him on the floor, both offensively and defensively, and the offensive thing is really what changed. Pack rating, I have him as the sixth most influential offensive player in the NBA. I mean, there's just not a lot more to say about how incredible Rudy was this year. Just admiration for his work, his commitment, his dedication to being great. And, you know, as he matures, I think we'll see more and more out of it. All right, let's go to some of your questions. What about Joel Bolomboy as a backup center, says Bart Stump. I think that's really a high possibility. I think, you know, he might be a backup four. He might be a backup five. But I think Bolomboy, when we start escalating the salary numbers on our big boys, we now have to those guys have to play. You know, I would say this, and I don't mean this. I would say this about anyone. I like Joel. I like what he's doing. There is an unnatural hometown belief in Joel Bolomboy beyond probably where he is as a player right now, because he's our guy. He went to Weber State. We like him. We see him. But he's got some skills. Like, he's got the elite jump. He's got second jump. He's a good rebounder. He's working on his shooting. You know, I think he was described well by Dennis Lindsay as if you kind of are a marathon and you think of the, you know, you're running a third of it in high school and a third of it in college and the last third of it in the pros. Like, he's running probably two thirds of his marathon in the pros, learning how to play. And so, you know, but he is still, I know that our fan base just adores him and loves him because he's our guy, right? But I would say, so he's still got a ways to go, but I think he may have to play and may, hopefully he'll do well. They use the D League perfectly for what you're, you know, what you'd want out of him this year. It's why you use the D League in that fashion. And so to the Jazz credit, that's what we've gotten very good at, is developing players. He's going to have to be another one in the process. I don't think he's as far along as our general fan base thinks he is. Doesn't mean I don't think he'll get there. He's got those skills, everything I just laid out. But I think he's got a little bit further to go than some people realize. Scott states, I don't agree with your recent comments about the Warriors and asking fans to not complain about super teams. I normally like what you do, but it really seemed like you shot an air ball with your take on this one. The NBA needs more parity. Like, okay, that's great. You can say it needs more parity, but it's never had parity. It's been fine forever without it. The game, by definition, doesn't yield to parity. Baseball yields to parity. The best players only have an impact once an hour. They get four at-bats out of 36 trips to the guys going up. It sucks if you're a fan. The NBA, LeBron gets the ball every possession. Kyrie Irving can have the ball every possession. Stars matter. Like, I, you can tell me I shot an air ball, but you're living in a fantasy land. I don't know what you're talking about, frankly, because it's never been any other way. Like, I backed up and documented the numbers pretty openly to you that we have when do you think we've ever had parity? Like, when was it? When Michael Jordan won every title, we had parity? When Magic Johnson went to the finals like 8 years in a row, we had parity. When Larry Bird and Julius, we had parity. When Detroit won three in a row, we had parity. Like, you can tell me that you think the NBA needs parity. It's never had it and never will. All right? It never will. Frankly, there's actually no numbers that back up that parity is good for anyone. It really just means that you, and I'm with you, it just means that we got our ass kicked by a team that's historically great, and it sucks. Because they're just so much better than everyone else. But it's the idea it's ruining the game. I heard Mike Greenberg on this. It's It's a 24-hour news cycle with people not anything to talk about. It's just not true. Like, did it ruin the game when Magic's Lakers went 3-0, 4-0, 4-0? Did it? Because I don't think it did. Did it ruin the game when Magic's Lakers went 3-0, 4-1, 4-0? Or in 86-87 when it went 3-0, 4-1, 4-0? Now, eventually, like, those Celtics teams got a little older and they got less good, and the Pistons lost them in seven, then the Pistons beat them the next year. And I just moved something that was holding my camera up. This is very tricky. I have to get a piece. And then the Pistons went 3-0, 3-0, 4-2 against a Bulls team that was knocking on the door. This is just how the league is and how it's always been. It's by the definition how the game works. Because the best players influence the NBA more than any other sport. Tom Brady's won two of the last three Super Bowls. Why? Because the next biggest is quarterbacks in the NFL. Baseball, anybody can win. Because Mike Trout only gets to have four at-bats in 36 per 36, which is, frankly, I think, really stupid. And I'm a huge baseball guy. I played in college. First thing I do with baseball is get rid of batting orders. I want to see Mike Trout. I don't want to see him four times. I'm not paying $50 to sit in a game and go see the best player play four times and maybe not get a ball hit to him. Like, it's what's wrong with baseball. And I'm a huge baseball fan. Frankly, I think it's what's wrong with soccer. If I want to, I want less players on the field. If I go watch Messi because I want to see the greatest player in the world, and they got nine guys in the box taking away Messi's ability to do things, that's not good for anyone. Let the stars play. That's what we've done in the NBA. That's why LeBron will face Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, and the Warriors are historically all-time great. And a bunch of unique circumstances took place to allow that to happen. Right? Like, you had to have three major things happen for the Warriors to happen. You had to have Steph Curry, your superstar, have bad enough ankles that he signs an $11 million extension that people at the time thought the Warriors were nuts to sign. You have to have Draymond Green hit as a second-round draft pick. Give him credit. Let's never discuss that. And third, you have to have this unusual salary spike on the year where the next best player in the NBA is available. And happens to live in Oklahoma City. Joshua Crouton says, there haven't been teams sweeping every team on the way to the finals. I know what's happened here. That's actually just not true. Like, it's, okay, once before in the history, we've had a team that like the 89-90 Lakers swept all the way through the playoffs. But like, okay, so I got it. And if Kawhi Leonard hadn't gotten hurt and George Hill hadn't gotten hurt, maybe the Warriors lose a game along the way. And then they're no different than the 83-80 or the 84-85 Celtics. I got the list right in front of me. I can just pull them all up. Like, it's happened 79-80. What was it? It was the Lakers going 4-1 and the 76ers going 4-1 in their two series. 81-82, the Lakers swept their two series 8-4-0-4-0. 82-83, the 76ers go 4-0-4-1. They played fewer series then. 83-84, the Lakers went 3-0, 4-1, 4-2. Like, if you know who's going to win, so they're dominant. Kawhi, their best player on the Spurs didn't play. The second or third best player on the Jazz didn't play. So it's become more divergent than it would be otherwise. But this idea that's ruining the game and it's something new, it's just not true. It's just not true. It's a 24-hour news cycle of people that are bored and need something to talk about because there's no games. And frankly, as Tyson Ewing just pointed out on Facebook Live, there's absolutely no data anywhere that shows that super teams are anything but good. But good. You don't think the ratings this NBA Finals are going to be the best ratings since the Jazz and the Bulls played a second time in a row? Which, by the way, they played a second time in a row. I mean, be upset your team lost. You're right. We don't have a lot of chance. But you know what? If we're really honest about the league, there's four teams that have a chance to win a championship every single year. That's it. They're the teams that have the singular best players. And can we discuss another myth while we're at it? Let's discuss another myth. The Detroit, with their championships, the Bad Boys, and the other championship did it without superstars. Isaiah Thomas, Hall of Fame. Joe Dumars, Hall of Fame. Bill Laimbeer should be Hall of Fame. Dennis Rodman, Hall of Fame. Can we stop? Chauncey Billups, close to Hall of Fame. Rip Hamilton, awfully close to Hall of Fame. Tayshaun Prince, probably not Hall of Fame, but awfully good. Ben Wallace, Hall of Fame. Rasheed Wallace, probably should be Hall of Fame. Right? Like, let's not kid ourselves about it. I would suggest you sit back and watch two of the greatest teams in the history of the NBA play a third time in the NBA Finals, which has never happened in the history of the league. We have the arguably the most dominant player ever in the history of the game. Actually, I don't think that's actually arguable. Maybe Wilt. Since Wilt. Most dominating player. And he's carrying his team. And there's actually been another team that's been constructed well enough to actually make it so LeBron's an underdog. It's like Michael Jordan being an underdog. That simply never happened. It's kind of awesome, actually. All right, let's go through some other questions. Let me back this baby up before we get derailed again. I didn't shoot an air ball. Assuming Hayward stays, do you think there's any chance of Utah building a super team about Rudy and Gordon? No, because we don't have any money, and we don't have a city that appeals to people for that. And I don't think either of those are like... I mean, no. The answer is no. Who has the most trade value besides Rudy? I think this is an incredibly good question. This is an... Who does? Who has our highest trade value? If you're Dennis Lindsay and you're moving the chips around the table. Chips? I always do that wrong. Who do other teams want? What's Rodney's value? What's Derek on a 10-year, $10 million, $11 million contract? What's Dante's value? Are we willing to do that? I don't know if I am. I think Dante, I was talking to somebody in the NBA yesterday who thinks Dante still is going to be really good. I don't know. Who has our most trade value? Boris, expiring contract? You trade for Boris today, and you can then he's non-guaranteed next year. That's probably our biggest value piece right there. Who? I don't know. It's a great question. Trey Lyles? Not sure I'm willing to move that. Interesting question. Thank you very much, Tim. Appreciate it. Henry from Australia says, thoughts on any point guards that could give us a boost in certain situations, Williams, Patty Mills. I'm going to do next week a series of shows on point guards. I'm hoping to talk with Locked On Wolves about rookie Rubio, talk with Locked On Heat about Goran Dragic, talk with Locked On Raptors about Corey Joseph, talk with Locked On Suns about Eric Bledsoe. That's the plan. So we'll do a lot of point guard stuff. If there's somebody else you think's available, the Jazz could try to go get, let me know. How much actual effect can the sixth man the crowd have on a game? I'm not trying to be cynical. I always wonder. I know players reference it, but I always wonder how much is just playing for the fan. Well, home court. So if you're being cynical, the data shows that home court advantage only has shown over history in Utah and Denver, where there's altitude, that home teams win basically all at the same rate. But I do think there's a value to it. I think there's an impact. I think it would be wrong to say otherwise. Sorry, I have to lean across here to look. So don't yell at me and start throwing things. I'm not that irrational. Well, okay, maybe. But your comments about people whining about super teams, you gave examples of teams from back in the day, but the difference from those teams to the teams today, the Warriors have four All-Stars. No team has had that except for maybe the Pistons back when they made their run. No, the Celtics had four All-Stars and the Lakers had four All-Stars. I mean, Worthy, Magic, Jabbar, and at different times, different other All-Stars. I think they're, I mean, the Warriors are historically great. There's no question, and I'm not trying to say the Warriors just run it. I think the Warriors are the greatest team that's ever been put together. I think the task of trying to knock off the Warriors is the most daunting task that's ever been, that there's ever been. Don't misunderstand me at all on that. I'm in complete agreement. I mean, those Lakers teams with Shaq and Kobe were pretty darn good too, by the way. Right? I mean, those were some dominating groups. You got the two best, arguably had the two best players in the league. And they, you know, they had occasional little battles where, you know, I think they had their internal issues, so they could never figure out who they were. But like Glenn Rice was great. When Glenn Rice, 30-year-old Glenn Rice was a hell of a player before he was like one of the most efficient players in the league before it, some of those teams. And they lacked the maybe the fourth guy, right? Rick Fox was probably their fourth best player who's not as good as, you know, Klay Thompson. And as time went on, when Glenn Rice suddenly left and other guys went other places, they actually got less good as time went on. Those two dominant stars carried them. But I guess maybe I don't disagree with that at all, other than just to say, like, yeah, I think this is probably the most dominating team we've ever had. But I also think we might have forgotten, like, how good Byron Scott was as a 25-year-old playing with Jabbar, Worthy, and Magic. Right? I mean, he's... You know, he's not that far off of Klay Thompson, frankly. Different game, different era, different time. I mean, but he averaged just 22 a point a game at some point in his career. Byron Scott was damn good, right? If we're playing with three more, you know, he's taking two threes a game instead of eight threes a game. It's different, a little bit of a different era, so it's hard to tell. Michael Cooper was really good. Michael Thompson was the number one pick on that the draft, right? I mean, Michael Cooper was an eight-time all-defensive player in the NBA. Like, that's Draymond Green. Just in a different year and a different way they played it. So some of those teams, pretty loaded. Thank you, Joshua. I didn't throw anything. Can you get the stats and team stats from George Hill pre and toe post-injury? I did a lot of it on the George Hill show. I would suggest, if you don't mind, going back to get that. You know, the defensive numbers are what's glaring is that Jazz weren't as good defensively without post-toe. His length of time, he played games together. But his second-half season was pretty strong, right? I mean, he had a pretty good second half of the season shooting, and his back-to-back numbers aren't great. It's hard. I mean, his toe injury is November. It's pretty much his season. He still had career highs across the board. Besides our own free agents, who are some big names we could sign? None, because if we sign George Hill and we sign Gordon Hayward, we don't have any money. You got to have, the way it works is you have to have, I want to make an apology, by the way. I too often have assumed knowledge here. So I am going to try to do a better job in the upcoming weeks of making sure I explain why. So Jeremy asks a good question. Who else can we sign? So the way it works is you can only sign free agents if you have cap space. And that's your salaries minus whatever the cap space is. As long as George Hill and Gordon Hayward are on our roster and we've re-signed them, we don't have any cap space. So then we will function over the cap. When you're functioning over the cap, what you can do is you can sign players to exceptions. So there's a mid-level exception, a veteran exception, and one other, I think. And those are kind of middle-of-the-road contracts or even lower, smaller contracts. And that's how you sign players. So a big-name free agent, you're going to have to clear a bunch of cap space. Unless we rescind the rights to Gordon Hayward, in other words, he signed somewhere else, rescind the rights to George Hill, in other words, we don't want him anymore, rescind the rights to Joe Ingles, and rescind the rights to Shelvin Mack, we don't have enough cap space to go sign any marquee free agents. So, you know, we don't have big-name free agents we can go sign, nor have we really ever been able to do that. Jazz backup center next year favors kind of overpaid to just be a backup center and not motivated to be just a backup center. Right, but if you're starting power forward, he's playing some center minutes, then he's very underpaid. Shane, Rudy needs a post move. Right or left-hand hook would be unguardable. I don't know if I agree with you on that. I mean, yeah, that if he got those, would be great. And it would be nice if we had someone we could shove the ball down to at times. But it's not a very efficient play. It's not really a huge part of the league. And he's a pretty dominant offensive player right now without it. if he could get it, it'd be nice. But I think the process of trying to get it and wasting those possessions to go down there would make you a less efficient team. The best post-up players in the league shoot about 41-42% on post-ups. Would it be possible and a good idea to try and package Favors, Burks, and Exum plus a couple of picks for Paul George or Jimmy Butler? And, oh, also sign Hill. Well, so first thing is Paul George would leave in free agency the next year to go to Los Angeles, so I think that would probably be a bad idea. And then does Chicago want Derek Favors, Alec Burks, and Dante Exum for Jimmy Butler? Like, does Chicago want that? Burks hasn't played in 2 years. Favors has got a year left on his contract, and Exum is a question mark for an all-star? All-NBA player? Who's under contract? I mean, it'd be great if we could. You've suggested that acquiring a point guard July 1st would be best. I feel like Bledsoe or Rubio would be the best options. What are your thoughts on both, and are they gettable? Well, I don't know exactly. We're going to talk to guys, Wes Goldberg of Locked On, Kellen Olson of Locked On Suns about Bledsoe, and hopefully Zach Bennett of Locked On Wolves about Rubio next week. I don't know if they're gettable. Rubio still is not a great shooter. I sometimes think Rubio's the player who, when you have see him once or twice a year, you love him. When you have him 82 times, he causes you problems. I'm really lost on Bledsoe. I don't know if he makes his teammates better. I don't know if he plays to win. I'm not saying he doesn't. I don't know these things. I don't know if he can stay healthy. I do know he's a one-on-one player, breakdown guy who is just tough. I do know that when he was with the Clippers, he was an awesome defensive player, and I'm not sure he's been that defensive player since he's been in Phoenix. I'm not sure Phoenix has been a winning environment for him to be in to show any of these things, and so I'd like to know a little bit about him. I do know he's averaged 20 points a game. I do know his three-point shooting has gotten good enough. I do know he's tough as hell late. I do know he's tough as hell, period. I do know he goes to the line 6-7 times a game, which is great. I do know he rebounds well as a guard. I do know he gets 6 assists a game, so he's got to be playing with his teammates a little bit. I do know, like, he's tough. I like him. I do know they want to turn the team over to Devin Booker. There's a lot of things I like about him. I also don't like he played 43 games, 81, 31, and 66 in the last few years. I do like he's 27 years old, not 31. Do you think Derek Favors would take a team-friendly contract if he had a good year next year, and would he leave to a bad team for more money? Because if he'd take the money, he didn't get paid last time. He's going to get paid this time. I know you don't really like LaMarcus Aldridge. Does that dislike translate to the Jazz? Would he be a decent fit here? I think he's an inefficient offensive player. I mean, I think we're kind of seeing that. I mean, if that's our fit and we can make a deal for him and there's a way to use him as a pick-and-pop player off our offense, maybe he becomes more efficient. But my general take on LaMarcus Aldridge has always been that he's not a very efficient offensive player, and Portland did not seem to struggle when he left. The character, the engagement issues in Portland seem to be real, and you know, he's a negative 0.7 pack player. It's not anything new. He goes to the line limited, and he doesn't shoot threes. And he shoots a lot of mid-range inefficient shots. I'm not a big fan. Will the Warriors have any problems with Steph Curry getting paid this year? And how long can they keep this team together with Klay, Draymond getting paid in the next few years? Well, they're going to have so much money coming in on the new stadium. They can hold it together. I just think there's a chance Klay Thompson might decide he wants to go prove his point somewhere else. I just don't think it holds together forever. Just because something has been broken doesn't mean we should just accept it and hope for improvement. I ought to be honest with you. Having two great teams for the well-being of the league, maybe not the well-being for the Utah Jazz, but the well-being of the league is not broken. There's nothing broken about this league right now. Talked a little bit about Rubio. Did Ballin Boy. How about trading D-Fave and AB for draft picks? Got to ask why someone is making the deal on the other end. Letting Mac go, Mac, Dio, and Withy. It's a lot of stuff there. I'm going to move on. Okay, a lot of parody discussion here. NBA is not an upset league, guys. If we acquire, someone's asking if we go get Rubio before July 1st, are we sending a message to George Hill? Yeah. We're sending a message to Gordon Hayward that we have your point guard for you, we're moving forward, and that we're not going to free agency trying to say to Gordon, hey, you know, we're going to get George, we hope to get George figured out, and then George goes and signs with Brooklyn, and then Gordon's like, wait a second, you don't have a point guard, I'm off. Like, that's the scenario we got to avoid. So there's a lot of incentive to, as much as we might like George Hill, the timing with him not taking the extension means that there, it might be advantageous for the organization to make a move before July 1. It's an unfortunate reality. It's not a statement on what you think of George Hill. It's a statement on the circumstances of the franchise and how you have to address timing. Let's see. I think we've done 35 minutes. I think we're good. That has been Locked On Jazz, brought to you by Shamrock Auto Group, 801-319-2250 out in Pleasant Grove. Back with you tomorrow. We'll talk Boris Diaw and Jeff Withey on our player recaps. And next week, we'll look at point guards. This has been Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
The kids are playing and laughing. The house is filled with the life you've worked so hard to build. You're committed to protecting this life and everyone in it. Life insurance from USAA can help.
Call 1-800-531-LIFE for a quote.